This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, racial justice editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. South Africa has filed a genocide claim against Israel at the International Court of Justice at The Hague. The claim centers on Israel's relentless bombing of the Gaza Strip, considered to be the most destructive campaign of the century, worse even than what was done in Syria, Ukraine, or during the Second World War. The official death toll has now surpassed 22,000, and Israel says it intends to intensify its campaign. The U.S. has been Israel's biggest political supporter, supplying it with hundreds of millions of dollars of weaponry. We turn now to Huwaida Araf, a Palestinian-American activist, human rights and civil rights attorney, co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement, and founder and former chair of the Free Gaza Movement. Welcome to Rising Up, Huwaida.
Thank you for having me, Sonali. I wish it was under a little bit better, a lot better circumstances.
Well, you and I have talked many times over the years, often around Israel's bombing campaigns of Gaza. Unfortunately, there have been far too many times that has happened. This time, it's different. It's monumentally, historically different. Let's begin by getting your response to the fact that there is international law against so much of what Israel has done in Gaza, but specifically when it comes to the issue of genocide, the genocidal language that Israeli officials have used, and of course the actual actions on the ground seem to be a cut and dry case of genocide. I mentioned at the top South Africa's efforts. Is there any international law that can stop the horror?
Well, there are international laws that govern how states are supposed to conduct hostilities. So once hostilities begin, no matter, you know, whether they are justified or not, that's another topic. But there is what's called a body of law, international humanitarian law. They call it the laws of war. And those are intended to protect civilians and civilian infrastructure as much as possible during times of armed conflict. And Israel has been massively violating them all. First and foremost, within a day of Israel's, you know, assault on Gaza, it announced that its foreign minister announced that it was going to cut off all food, water, electricity, and fuel to the entire Gaza Strip. And Israel controls everything that goes in and out of Gaza. And so there was a clear intention to attack the entire civilian population by depriving them of the necessities of life. This is a clear war crime, and it was declared openly. It's been criticized by international human rights and humanitarian organizations, but no one has stepped in to prevent Israel from doing this. And that goes for all of Israel's violations that are being documented. You know, Sonali, a few weeks ago, there was a very revealing article done by 972 magazine, which is an Israeli outlet. And the journalists and investigators conducted numerous interviews with current and former Israeli military officials. And one of the things that they said is that Israel has very precise information and intelligence on Gaza and who and what occupies each building that they strike. So when they make a decision to strike a building, they know roughly how many people they're killing, including children. And you mentioned this startling death toll, and almost half of those have been children. And every day we are seeing Palestinians trying to dig civilians and a lot of children out from under the rubble of their homes. And so this kind of attack, not distinguishing between military targets and civilian targets, it is also another violation. So there are these laws, and Israel is in violation of many of them. But then comes the question of who implementation of the law, who is going to hold Israel accountable. And for that, there are in international legal institutions. There is the International Criminal Court, which people have been crying out to for it to take action, to issue international arrest warrants for the Israeli prime minister and Israeli military leaders. But the International Criminal Court and its prosecutor, Karim Khan, has not been moving on it, and which leads a lot of people to really say that the International Criminal Court is just dominated by political considerations, and it is not going to be effective in holding Israeli violators of international law accountable. But then you have the initiative taken by South Africa to invoke the Genocide Convention at the International Court of Justice. That is a different kind of measure. It is a different kind of court, able to do different things. And some of us are hopeful that we will be able to get a interim preventative measures, an interim order that Israel is to stop its crimes, stop its attacks. And those hearings are coming up very soon. And we do see reports that Israel is concerned.
In the past, we've, you know, had to look back on genocides, think about what it could have taken to prevent them. You know, the United Nations was formed from the ashes of terrible global destruction. And yet, of course, when there's actually a chance to stop a genocide, political considerations seem to take precedence. The United States has time and again protected Israel at the United Nations. And it seems as though one of the only things that can stop Israel or curb it is to shame it. And so there have been these mass global protests that have seemingly shown a turning of the tide against Israel. Whatever goodwill Israel might have had is just being lost pretty rapidly, right? And any sympathy it might have had after the October 7th Hamas attack seems to have been lost. Is that global shaming one of the only tools that people can sort of have in a collective sense that doesn't rely on governments?
Well, that is a good question. Before that, I just want to comment on your comment about preventing genocide. And that is so important. And that is why the convention on the Genocide Convention is the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. And in Article 1, before it even gets into the definition of genocide and the acts that constitute genocide, Article 1 says that the contracting parties confirm that genocide, whether committed in times of peace or in time of war, is a crime under international law, which they undertake to prevent and to punish. Obviously, the goal is to prevent a genocide before it takes place. And that is why it is under Article 1 states. And there are 153 states that are signatory to the Genocide Convention. Each and every one of them had an obligation to take measures to prevent a genocide. And that has not been done. We just saw recently South Africa invoke the Genocide Convention at the International Court of Justice, but that it wasn't done earlier, that states haven't done more, that the United States, as you mentioned, has been complicit in not only doing nothing to prevent the crime of genocide, but has actively been aiding and abetting genocide with statements from the U.S. administration meant to cover up Israel's crime, statements saying that Israel has no red lines, which is horrific. It is scary because, as I mentioned, international humanitarian law is about red lines. You can't do whatever you want. Civilians are to be protected, but the United States has said more than once, Israel has no red lines. That is a slap in the face to the international legal order. And
just for our audience, by red line, you mean there is a standard that shouldn't be crossed, right? Basically, that now we're being told that Israel is the country that has the exception, that doesn't get to have any standards, doesn't need to have any standards applied to it, and that it can basically have carte blanche to commit any sort of crime that it wants to because it has been deemed special.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it raised a lot of criticism, but the United States has been kind of steadfast in using this kind of rhetoric. And then on the side, it will say that it is concerned about Palestinian civilians, but it has done nothing to ensure the protection of Palestinian civilians. So it's paying lip service, I think, to try to quell some of the anger and some of the internal dissent within the Biden administration as to the U.S. policy of this unbridled support for Israel's actions. And we have heard a lot of the internal dissent, and yet Biden and his administration are steadfast, and you know, they continue to ship weapons to Israel, even bypassing Congress in sending reinforcements of, you know, military ammunition to Israel, knowing full well they know better than us the intelligence and how many civilians Israel is killing. And they know that Israel has the technology to avoid civilian harm. And yet we are seeing these massive civilian casualties, especially to children. And so this is clear proof that Israel is not taking any measures. This is an assault meant to inflict as much damage as possible. And recently, Human Rights Watch actually said, and there have been other reports, that 70 to 80% of the homes in Gaza have been destroyed. You can imagine this is worse than the bombing on Dresden during World War II. Israel is inflicting massive, massive destruction and death upon a captive Palestinian population. You have 2.3 million people living in an area the size no bigger than Detroit. You know, it's 142 square miles, and it is surrounded on all sides by Israel. So people have nowhere to run, nowhere to flee. And you know, Israel tries to say, we are warning people to leave their homes, but that has resulted in the displacement of 1.9 million people with nowhere safe to go. They say, Israel says, go south, the people go south, and then Israel bombs the south, and there is nothing. They're setting up tents. It's getting cold there. There is no sanitation. There is no running water. There is a lack of food. And the World Health Organization weeks ago warned that if immediate action is not taken, disease will kill more Palestinians than the bombing has killed. So you have this outbreak of disease, about 400,000 cases of these communicable diseases. Now, a no treatment, Israel has destroyed the hospitals in Gaza, and it continues. So to your question, is it about shaming Israel? Well, for decades, Israel has presented itself as the victim. I think it has become very clear to the entire world that Israel is not the victim. It is not only genociding people in Gaza, but it is simultaneously bombing Syria, bombing Lebanon. It is an aggressor state, and it is doing this all in the name of maintaining a system of colonialism and apartheid, which in themselves are crimes against humanity. So yes, shaming needs to be done, recognizing that Israel is an aggressor, settler, colonial, apartheid state, violating international human rights and humanitarian law in order to maintain this system, and then taking action in order to try to compel or force Israel to change its ways. And we see that not only the demonstrations, which have been in their millions, people calling for a ceasefire, in the immediate. You need a ceasefire to save lives, but then you need action to actually force Israel to comply with international law. And that requires a dismantling of the apartheid system. You know, we talk about solutions or what's possible. You have to first come to a recognition that Israel is a settler colonial project. And part of the settler colonial project is to replace the indigenous population. And so through the years and through the decades, Israel has been doing that by pushing Palestinians into smaller and smaller cantons or smaller and smaller areas of land as it has expanded its annexation and control of the land. And now many of us see Israel's campaign in Gaza is as part of this, its settler colonial project in terms of killing as many Palestinians as possible or forcibly displacing them, therefore the widespread destruction. And we must be vocal about this. And once we are able to get a ceasefire, then work on the kind of pressure that is necessary again to dismantle these oppressive structures. And people, civil society have been doing that through global boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaigns. And we must start putting true pressure on our own governments to stop this support of Israel that has allowed it to get away with such crimes for far too long. And we will see what happens with the Biden administration, because here in the United States, so many Palestinians, Arabs, Muslims, progressive young voters, and others have said that there is no way that they are going to vote for Biden in the upcoming elections because he is complicit. He has enabled this genocide. And that doesn't bode well for, you know, for the future too of this country.
However, there was a little bit of admission by the Biden administration, President Biden in particular, calling the Israeli targeting of Gaza indiscriminate bombing. But then very quickly, you saw White House State Department officials backtrack on that, downplay just that one little slip of an admission, damage control, if you will. And, we just keep wondering, what is this hold that Israel has over the United States? And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the fact that we do have a slightly more diverse Congress than we used to. Congress holds the purse strings of the United States, determines the Israeli, the military aid to Israel. And we have people like Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar in Congress now in a way that have changed at least the conversation. Does that greater diversity, both racial diversity, demographic diversity, and diversity of political views in Congress, has that had enough impact in this assault on Gaza, or is it just not nearly enough?
Well, it's not quick enough in order to change and save lives. I can't intelligently comment on what is holding Biden, though I have read various reports suggesting that Biden is of this old school thought and considers himself a Zionist and just will go to extreme lengths to protect Israel at all costs. And that is why all of this kind of internal dissent within from his campaign staff, from his administration, from the State Department, various cables, we've seen resignations, we've seen cities around the country adopting ceasefire resolutions, we've seen members of Congress increasingly sign on to a resolution for ceasefire. And the demonstrations all across the country, and Biden seems to be just ignoring all of that. And I don't know specifically what it is, but there is that reporting that this is just kind of his policy and his specific mentality, and that has been him for decades. But you're right in that the diversity of representatives now is helping to get another view out there, because for so long, also, our Congress has been dominated by representatives who have been beholden to the Israel lobby, which pours millions and millions into campaigns and has been touted as the strongest lobby on Capitol Hill, the strongest lobby in Washington. But when civil society mobilizes, and over the last few years, with the election of Rashida Tlaib and other members, the squad, and beyond the squad, it is a show of what people can do when they mobilize with these small dollar donations to elect people, representatives that actually represent them, and then that these representatives will not be beholden to the power of the pro-Israel lobby, then we can see actually the truth come out. And these are the truth speakers in Congress. And they don't let AIPAC bully them around, which is important. While certainly lobbying is, you know, your feature of the U.S. political system, when it gets to the point where millions and millions of dollars can buy votes, then you drown out and you actually end up killing really our democratic system, where my vote is supposed to be no less equal than somebody else's vote. And that kind of increase in political activity, people running for office themselves, representatives running and not taking big corporate money, I think that has been a game changer. And I hope that continues to increase so that we not only see the truth being spoken to power on Palestine, but on a lot of other issues where really big money lobbyists have dominated. But certainly on Palestine, it has been stark. And that is, you know, that is important. That needs to continue. I think that needs to continue with the recognition that us here in the United States, as voters, we have a certain power, and we should use it to support as much as we can candidates, those who would put forward themselves to run for office, which is not an easy thing, but support candidates that represent our values and mobilize to also protect them so they are not vulnerable to the attacks of the lobbies. For example, Rashida Tlaib, Jamal Bowman, AOC, those Representative Cori Bush, those who have been the most vocal on Palestinian rights are being targeted by AIPAC. But the support of average citizens who donate, you know, $1 or $5 or whatever they can and mobilize to get people to vote, that is the counterweight to AIPAC.
Lastly, are there any resources that you suggest people look at? A lot of people feel helpless who, you know, a lot of Americans who disagree deeply with what the United States is supporting Israel in doing to Palestinians in Gaza. Is there any idea that you can give in terms of what folks can do individually?
Absolutely. And thank you for that question, because we really need every single person mobilized. And it doesn't always have to be demonstrating in the streets, although that is important. There are groups around the country doing things in their own locales, and that is important. But one of the things that you can do wherever you are, and it just takes a few minutes a day, is to call your representative, to call your elected representative. Various, we've been pushing Congress, but certainly other levels of office are important too, and calling the White House, demanding a ceasefire. And there are easy tools to help people to do that. Two of the organizations that have toolkits out there, you just go to their website, is the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights. And just Google the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights and Jewish Voice for Peace. They both, and others, but those both have resources out there that can make the calls for you. They have scripts. And if you just log a few calls every day, shouldn't take more than 5 to 10 minutes, maybe, if somebody answers and you can have a discussion. We are increasing the pressure. These representatives are hearing from us that we are opposed to the genocide and we demand a ceasefire. The people of the United States do not want their tax dollars to go funding this genocide and Israel's continued crimes.
Thank you so much, Huwaida, for joining us, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Huwaida Araf, a Palestinian-American activist, human rights and civil rights attorney, co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement and former chair of the Free Gaza Movement. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, racial justice editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.